Tanya 200. We're studying the Tanya, the classic work of Hasidic philosophy written by the first Lubavitcher Rebbe 200 years ago. And we're celebrating the anniversary, the 200th anniversary, by studying the Tanya. We're up to chapter 35, but before we begin, let's do a quick review. The entire Tanya is based on one verse in the Torah where Moshe says to the Jewish people, serving God is not a difficult and unnatural act. It's not in heaven where you have to go up to heaven to serve God. It's not across the ocean that you would have to cross the ocean to be able to serve God. Rather, it is very close to you in your heart and in your mouth to do. Which means that serving God comes natural and easily to every person, both in behavior and in emotion. In your heart means your emotion. In your mouth, to do, which is speech and action, that implies behavior. So we can certainly do the mitzvah. It's not difficult. It's not in heaven. And we can even serve God with the heart. We can love and fear God as we do the mitzvah, which is called the service of the heart. The question that needed to be answered was, how do we explain the statement concerning the heart? Because we find in our experience that the heart is not naturally or easily moved by godliness to love and fear God. It's preoccupied, the human heart, is preoccupied with self-love or selfish love, not love of God. So how is it that for every person it is very natural and easy to serve God with your heart? To explain this, the Rebbe introduced us to the two souls, the godly soul and the human soul. The godly soul naturally loves God. It is a piece of God. The human soul resists. So very briefly, we are capable of serving God with our heart, with our emotions, either by contemplating God's greatness and arousing through that understanding and through that contemplation a love for God in the heart and a fear of God. Or, more easily accessible, is the inherited natural love that every godly soul has for God without any contemplation on our part, other than to remember the nature of our soul. So to know that we are essentially godly, and that in our inner heart, which is our godly soul, we want to serve God and we want to be connected to Him, that's what animates the emotion with which we perform the mitzvah and fulfill God's will. So it's very close because it's inherited. And although it is not that kind of emotion that is the dramatic, fiery feeling in the heart, it's more of a attachment and the desire to remain attached rather than a romantic kind of a love. But that's why the wording in the verse is, it is very close to your heart to do, which means that part of your heart that is necessary for the doing. It is not emotion for its own sake, as an end in itself, but rather the emotion necessary to motivate and activate your performance of the command. After that, the Rebbe spoke about how to maintain the joy in the service of God, how to get rid of complacency so that the heart is alive in the service of God, and so on. Now, in chapter 35, the Rebbe wants to explain the virtue, the importance, and the greatness of the actual deed. because the emotion with which we serve God, that was explained, explored, and thoroughly treated in the first 34 chapters of Tanya, are important, significant, and meaningful only in that they lead to a better performance. In other words, when I do a favor to a friend, and I do it with heart and soul, with enthusiasm and with joy, that makes the favor and the deed more complete and greater than if I did the favor without heart, without feeling, without enthusiasm. So what is the virtue of the enthusiasm? What is the virtue of this love and joy that I'm feeling in my heart? The virtue is that it enhances the act of the favor. So the important thing is still doing you the favor. That's the essence. I can do you the favor willingly or unwillingly. I can do the favor with enthusiasm or with indifference. I can do the favor with heart and feeling, or I can do the favor mechanically. If I do it with heart and feeling, then the act, the favor that I do for you is enhanced by it. But it's the act that is the essence. How do we understand this? Why would an act be more significant than the feeling behind it? Secondly, and in the course of understanding, answering this first question, we will have an answer to the second question as well. What is the purpose of the life of an individual who will never be a saint? We learned earlier in Tanya that the average person was not meant to be a saint and will never become a saint. A saint means someone who has only one track, a godly track. There is no animal, there is no evil inclination, there is no distraction, no desire for anything other than godliness. That's a saintly person. The average person is of dual character. He's got two tracks. He has a godly soul that draws him towards godliness. He has a human soul or animal soul that draws him towards the unholy, towards selfish, towards the earthy. In this struggle, every time the godly soul prevails over the animal soul, every time the good inclination prevails over the evil inclination, that victory, the subduing of the unholy, serves God's purpose and fulfills the plan for which God created the world, in that it subdues the unholy, and the unholy surrenders to godliness. And this, we are told, causes a great pleasure in heaven. It gives God great pleasure when evil is rejected. The question remains, the person who will struggle with this evil all his life, of course he will overcome the temptations. His godly soul will prevail. But the animal soul is not going to change its color, its stripes. The animal soul will continue to desire the wrong things, will continue to love the wrong things and fear the wrong things, etc. So the essence of the animal soul will not change in the average person. So although it is subdued and although it is dismissed over and over again, what is the purpose of the godly soul being so intimately connected to an animal soul? If it's only for the struggle, if it's only for this contest of good versus evil, the godly soul and the animal soul don't have to share the same body. They don't have to share the same mind and heart. They don't have to be so intertwined with each other that you can't separate or tell them apart. That kind of closeness isn't justified simply by saying that the godly soul should overrule the animal soul. They can have their own realities and engage in a battle. So the fact that God puts the godly soul and the animal soul together into such intimate quarters must imply that there must be something more that the godly soul does for and with the animal soul. And so the Rebbe explains as follows. There's a statement in the Zohar where it says that in the womb, every fetus is taught the entire Torah. And during that time, there is a candle burning on the head of the fetus. But a candle needs oil. What is the oil? So the Zohar says the oil are the good deeds which we do that serve as the oil that connects the flame to the wick. Which means as follows. The body is a wick. The godliness, the presence of God, is a flame. The flame has to connect to the wick. But the wick is too coarse to hold the flame. So what do? In order for the candle to burn, we put oil into the candle. The wick absorbs the oil, and the oil absorbs the godliness, the flame. And so the godliness is contained in our body, the wick, through the intermediary of the oil. And what is the oil that every candle needs? The oil are the good deeds that we do, which means the mitzvahs that we perform. Now that is surprising, because you would think that the godly soul itself, rather than the deeds, rather than the behavior of the godly soul, but just the quality of the godly soul being a little piece of God itself, would be enough to serve as the oil that would connect God's presence to the body. So you have the body. God wants to be present in your body. What makes that possible? Your godly soul. That would seem to make a lot of sense. So when the Zohar says, don't fail to give oil to the candle, and then says that the oil are the good deeds, that comes as a surprise. Because the soul, you would think, is greater than its deeds. The soul is godly, the deed is physical. So we see from this that there is a virtue, there is a greatness, there is a godliness to the deed that the soul itself doesn't have. And in fact, even the study of Torah, which is the source of all the good deeds. How do we know what a mitzvah is? How do we know what we're supposed to do? Only by reading it in the Torah. And yet the study of Torah is not the oil. Only the good deeds serve as the oil. So the Rebbe explains. The godly soul, as great as it is, with its godly intelligence, cannot encompass God's presence. Because God is infinite and the soul is finite. And so for all of its wisdom and understanding, the godly soul is not a dwelling place for God because it's finite. No thought can comprehend God. Whereas the mitzvah is God's will. This is what God wants. God's will is Him. What you want, essentially, deeply, is who you are. That's you. That's the real you. God's inner will, God's inner want, that's the real Him. What does it mean, God's inner want? There were 10 utterances with which God created the world. But in these utterances, in the act of creation, God himself is concealed. Because we can look at creation and say, this is magnificent, this is beautiful, this is awesome. Not only the beauty of it, but also the wisdom of it, the orderliness of it, the perfection. This is very impressive and awesome. And so we know that God is awesome and impressive. But what does he want? What is his purpose? What is his pleasure? We don't know. And by examining the world, by studying nature, we will never know. Because God's purpose is concealed in nature, not revealed at all. That's what makes it nature. If God's purpose were revealed, then this would be heaven, not earth. If God's intention were revealed, this would not be a physical universe at all. And we would have no freedom of choice. And nothing would be as it is. The reason the world is as it is because when God said, I want light, only the external will was revealed, not the internal. And perhaps this is what is meant in the verse where we read, God said, let there be light, and there was light. What does that mean? When God said, let there be light, what was revealed? The need for light to exist. But the purpose, the inner will, is nowhere in evidence. So what happened when God said, let there be light? Only that there was light. But why is there light? We still don't know. When God said, let there be grass, what was the result? There was grass. And that's a disappointment, because that's all there was. And we know that that's not all there is. There is a purpose, there's a reason, there's an inner will. Why should light exist? For what purpose does grass exist? That was not at all revealed in the process of creation. So this is what the Torah is telling us. When God created the world, when God revealed his will for creation, it was only the external will, not the internal. So when God said, let there be light, there was only light. That's all. When God came to Mount Sinai and gave us the Ten Commandments, in these ten statements, his inner will is revealed. In the Ten Commandments, there is nothing about light. Of course, light is necessary for all of the Ten Commandments. Grass is necessary in order to be able to fulfill the Ten Commandments. But now we're finding out what it's for, the why, the purpose, the inner will. So when God gives us the commandments, he is telling us what he really wants, what his inner will is, what his inner intention is, and that is God himself. There's no concealment here. There's no obstruction. When a person studies Torah, and he reads the words of Torah, there is no obstruction here. God is being himself. God's self is now revealed in the world. But this does not involve the animal soul. And it does not involve the body very much. Because in the study of Torah, you use only two of the three garments. You use, obviously, the garment of thought. You can't study without thought. And to enhance the study, you say the words out loud, you add speech. So you study Torah in thought and in speech. But those are the two more refined of the three garments, the higher garments. Action is the third and the lower garment. And action involves the animal soul far more than thought and speech. Because when the godly soul wants to do a mitzvah, it needs the body to get up and go. It needs the hand to actually give the charity. It needs the body to actually eat the matzah. So, or to put on the tefillin. or to light the candle. So the godly soul doesn't have that kind of immediate access to the limbs of the body, to where the godly soul can tell the arm to move, or the feet to go, or the mouth to eat. Only the animal soul controls the behavior of the body. So when a person actually eats matzah, or puts on tefillin, or lights the Shabbos candle, it's the animal soul that is moving the body in the performance of that mitzvah. Which means that the animal soul is now engaged in godly service, in godly behavior. And since the purpose of a dwelling place is not just to have the godly soul succeed over the animal soul, but the purpose is to make the animal soul into a dwelling place for God, to make it a comfortable place for God, therefore, the act of the mitzvah is the oil that connects God's presence to the body. And that's why the Zohar says that the oil that enables the Shekhinah, God's presence, to be felt and revealed in the body, in the human being, the oil is the act of the mitzvah more than the godliness of the soul or the study of Torah. Because without the act of the mitzvah, the animal soul is not being engaged. The animal soul is not being drafted into the service of God and into the performance of the mitzvah. But when we do the mitzvah, and then the animal soul is included and plays a major role, an indispensable role, in the fulfillment of this mitzvah, although the animal soul's nature does not radically change, it's going to remain an animal soul, it's going to have the same desires and the same appetites and the same opinions or attitudes as it did before it performed the mitzvah. But for the duration, for the time that the person is doing the mitzvah, the godly soul has not only been subdued, the animal soul has not only been subdued and rejected by the godly soul, but it has in fact become part of this dwelling place for God, in that it is doing the mitzvah. Maybe not with true intention, maybe not with total self-sacrifice, but it is in fact harnessed to the mitzvah and has become part of the mitzvah. Now, with the mind and heart, when we serve God, before we get to the action, when we have only the knowledge and the emotion, there isn't a complete dwelling place for God, because there is a certain amount of resistance that doesn't exist in action. In order to love God, I have to be inspired. In order to understand God, I have to see it. I have to agree. It has to make sense to me. Now, on the one hand, it's great, it's wonderful, when godliness makes sense to a human being. That's a great coming together, a great merging of godliness and creation, when a human mind can actually understand and appreciate something about God. It's an even greater experience when the human heart, usually devoted to self and selfishness, actually feels a love or a fear of God. This is a great godly experience. But in order to have that experience, the human being has to feel and experience themselves almost as strongly as they're experiencing God. For one person to love another, the person has to experience himself as a significant player. I have to be significant in order to love you, because loving is my experience. This is my feeling. This is what I feel. To understand you, my mind has to be significant, because I'm understanding. It's making sense to me. And so to some degree, love is a selfish experience. You have to be part of the picture. You can't be left out, because if you don't count, then your emotions don't count, then your love doesn't count, and then there's nothing meaningful here. But when it comes to action, when I'm doing you a favor, I can discount myself completely. I don't have to be significant at all. I don't even have to be in the picture. The fact is, I'm doing you the favor. But if someone else would do you the favor, it would be just as good for you. And since in doing what you want, you're the one who counts, it's about you. In action, it is completely about you without me at all. Whereas in love, even if you're the one I love, I have to count, because love without the lover doesn't mean anything at all. And in many cases, the love is more about the lover than about the beloved. It's more about I want to be in love than you are lovable. So in action, there is a complete humility and transparency of self. God is completely revealed. His will is what counts, to the exclusion of everything else. And that's why the action is the main dwelling place, the main home for God.